You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
Honestly, I've been slicing and dicing that many bleeding times. I like a fat pack from IKEA, love. I've got the instructions tattooed on my bum. I'll put me together in the morning.
But before all of that... Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode. I am talking to you from the House of the Damned today. There's projectile vomit from the small one. There's snot from the husband... I am currently the only person in my whole house. Even the dog is ill. I'm the only person who's not ill. So I feel like it's coming my way, Jen. It's coming.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. It does kind of rip through families like wildfire, doesn't it?
I never thought I'd say it, but I miss the days of COVID where you could legitimately lock yourself in a room so that no one else could get it. And now I'm like, oh, God, you mean I've still got to feed you and look after you? Anyway, we have the bubbliest, happiest, sunniest guest today. Tell us who she is, Jen.
Yes. So this week we have Carrie Katona. She is a singer who achieved fame with Atomic Kitten at age 18. She's been on numerous reality shows, including being winner of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and a runner-up in Celebrity Big Brother.
And kicking our producer Dave off Celebrity Dancing on Ice, it seems.
Indeed. I didn't know anything about that. And she's got a new autobiography out called Whole Again.
Now, Kerry is a mum of five, and she's had some pretty high profile and frankly serious trials and tribulations in her life. So many more than most people have in a lifetime, poor Kerry. You talk about this in your book.
Hi, by the way, guys.
Hi!
I think that's the longest I've ever been quiet, ever. That was so hard.
Now, quiet for 2 minutes and I'll ask you a question, then you can talk all you want. Deal?
Deal.
So I wanted to say, in your book, you talk in pretty unflinching detail and there are some pretty shocking revelations in there, to say the least. You've had loads of media coverage, loads of judgment, loads of shit thrown at you. Why was this level of detail for the book so important to you?
I actually thought it was going to be therapeutic to get it off my chest. And it traumatised me. I've been asked for like the last 5 years to do another book. This is my third one. I'm only 42. And I kept turning it down. I thought, you know what, now's the time is right. I'm in a really good place, really happy. The happiest I've ever been. Whether I remain that way, who knows? We don't know. Just, I just thought the time was right. I thought it'd be a grieving process as well, but it turned out to be really, really traumatic. And I'm still traumatized by it, if I'm honest.
Was it from going back and revisiting those moments?
It felt as if it was all still real. I haven't dealt with it. Like as I was doing it, my hands were clawing, my toes were curling, and I was sweating. It fear, so much fear and anxiety. George has only passed away for 3 years. It still doesn't feel real. That still doesn't feel real that George isn't here anymore. But I think he did such a number on me and the children. The children's a part of the book as well. I wouldn't have done that without their permission. I won't put that out there without them. Molly read the book. Lily read the book. Hyde read the book. Things was taken out of the book because it's not just my story, it's their story. And there's only so much of their story I can tell because that's not up to me to do. That's down to them when they're ready. So it was a tough one. It was a tough one, but I've done it now. And then you write the book and then you forget you've got to promote it and go through it all again.
Well, I was just going to say, are you happy you wrote it? You say it was traumatic. Are you happy it's out there now or do you wish you could take it back?
Halfway through the book, around my age up and cancelled, said, I don't want to do this now. I don't want to do it. There's something with abuse that you feel so ashamed and guilty. I felt ashamed. I feel ashamed, and it was, every time I got a good idea, I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry, because it was my fault. I knew what buttons I was pressing. There's just, can I explain this? There's just a shame and guilt, and I don't know, just anxiety. I didn't want to do it, but the book only came out on Thursday, and the DMs I'm already getting from women and a few men, who were saying thank you so much. And I kept thinking, you know what, if this helps one person, just one, then it's been worth it, because there's no way I've been through what I've been through, all the shit I've been through since I've been born. There's got to be a reason for it. And I really believe that reason's to help others, because I should be dead. I should be. And I'm not a myth.
You've written really openly, frankly, about coercive, controlling, abusive behaviours at the hands of George. What is your advice for anyone dealing with that kind of thing in a relationship? You are, as you say, here. You've come through the other side. You're still traumatised by it, but you're happy. What would you say?
Yeah, so you know what? It's actually a real tough one, because each situation is so, so different. See, even now with my relationship with Ryan, like when my nan died, when George was alive, I drove up there, saw her quickly, and then George was by my side. Like, I couldn't go anywhere without George. And then when my auntie died, when I was with Ryan, I was up north for nearly a month. I was living down south. I kept going to my mum. Why is Ryan not ringing me? He doesn't love me. No, why is he not all over me? Why is he not here? Because coercive relationships and controlling behaviour, I thought, because he loved me that much, that's why I get a good eye. It's only because he loves me. It's just because he loves me so much. So I'm still trying to get used to being in a relationship where it's like, oh, this is normal then. So I can go to the shops without you. Because when I was with George, he'd do the cooking, the cleaning, the school runs, the shopping. And most women go, oh, that's bloody brilliant, that. Where can I get one? Has he got a brother? But that wasn't the case at all. It was a real, I am a very independent person. I've lived on my own since I was 16. I've always had my own money. I've always worked. But when I met George, because he wasn't in the industry, I gave him some of my power, which he then took all my power away from me. So I became really withdrawn and I couldn't function. I was drinking the day. If I had to go and do school run, for whatever reason that he allowed me to, I shit myself. I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like I became so codependent on him. It was so difficult. And what made me walk away, and I used to wake up every day and I look at George, I really fancied him. Even after a good eye, I thought, for your fit. You know, I always fancied him. And this one time, he looked at me in the face and it was about me going on to Big Brother and he's saying what he was going to do with the kids or whatever. And all I saw in that moment was pure ugliness just pouring out of him. And my Molly, this one time, he had a knife and he looked at me. Oh, he had a knife and was in the kitchen. And Molly gave me a look, my eldest daughter, of pure weakness. I thought, what am I doing? I end up in foster home because my mum's fella stabbed her. Told her he was Freddy Krueger. I pulled the knife out. He wanted to cut us up, chop us up and put us in the fridge. He wanted my mum to hold me down. And my mum went through it and I was like, I'll never go through that. And there I was, 20 odd years later, in the same relationship with my kids looking at me and I'm thinking, what are you doing, Kerry? What are you doing?
So was it the kids that, is that what gave you the strength to get away?
Yeah, Molly ended up leaving. She ended up moving over to Ireland. But yeah, it was definitely the kids. I just found it in a strength. I don't know where it came from. The only advice I can give to somebody is run, fucking run. Sorry for swearing, but run. Because I know if I had to say it, I'd be dead. I know it in my heart. My mum knows it. The kids know it. I know I'd have ended up being dead.
I think also what you're saying there is when people don't really understand the dynamics in those relationships, how they start out and they are good. They do feel nice. It feels like a lot of attention. It feels like a lot of, being looked after and, finally I can quit having to be in charge of everything. And it just keeps changing and changing.
It was my own doing as well. I look at George, he just got out of jail. Whoa, I'll have a bit of you. That's what I wanted, because I wasn't right in the head. You have to bear in mind, the way I was brought up with four sets of foster parents, three refugees. I was doing drugs with my mum from the age of 14. My mum was always with bad guys. I can't even begin to tell you this one guy she was with hung a baby out the window when I was a kid. My mum would go off. I was like 8 years of age looking after myself, making myself ketchup butties because me won't be on the piss somewhere. I didn't really know any different. So now if I had met Ryan, 10 years ago, I go, you're boring. That's because it was safe. I didn't know what safe was because my mum didn't have it modelled. And even though I might have a lot of anger towards my mum, I've got to remember to myself that she was once a baby born with no blueprint because my mum was in homes and things like that. I didn't know any different. It's like when they go, oh, well, Brian's a good dad, isn't he? No, he wasn't a good dad. He was in Australia for 7 years. But because he was still on the phone to the kids every blue moon, to me, that was a good dad. I'm a product of an affair, so I never got to meet my biological dad. So I didn't have a blueprint for that either. So when I never wanted to be rich and famous. I wanted to be a mum and a wife and have that unity. That's all I craved so badly. That's why I probably ended up going into fame, because I wanted to be loved. Like when I won the jungle, oh, God, everyone loves me, you know, because I never had it from home. You know, when you sit there watching your mum trying to kill herself constantly and am I not good enough, mum? That self-worth goes. So I went to seek it elsewhere. And that's why that's become a performer, an entertainer, making people laugh, making people cry. And then when I met Brian, my knight in shining armour took me away from my mum's council flat where everyone's doing drugs and heroin, all kinds of shit. That was great. But when Brian left me, you lie down with dirty dogs, you're going to get fleas. And I went straight back to my old roots. And because the unity had broken down, not only did I feel a failure as a wife and as a mother, I felt a failure as a woman. You know, so I was like, oh my God, I've got to get married again. Quick, I've got, you know, that's what it was. So I married my mum's drug dealer. But I got Max and Heidi from that. You know, every relationship at the back of my book, I do dedication to each of my husbands because I'm so eternally grateful to them. I have no hatred towards them. I've got no resentment towards them. I've got no hatred towards my mum. I've got to be thankful and blessed because I am so, so blessed to still be here. I've even got it here. I am so blessed and so lucky to have turned it all around. And I'm here to tell my story. And that's why I'm on here, so that give people some kind of hope.
You're so unbelievably candid about all this. And what's really refreshing is you take your role in it. You don't just blame everybody else for the stuff that's happened. You know the part you've played as well. But is there such a thing as too much exposure? Do you wish sometimes you could put it back in the bottle and say, oh, no, take it away. I wish I'd never said that.
Wishing's like almost regretting. I don't live with regret because there's nothing you can do about it. I regret nothing because it's made me who I am today and it's put me on the path I'm on today. My relationships with the papers have also been like an abusive marriage. And it has. I've needed them. They've needed me. I kept going back, kept leaving, going back. And then they're writing about me when I didn't want to be written about. That's the only way I can describe it. Yeah, and there were times. No, I'll never forget, right? So when I joined Atomic Kitten, we got a record deal, we had to go and see a lawyer. And each one of us had to tell our story about our past to make sure that nothing was going to come out about us, the more famous we got. Anyway, I think Tash went in there, she was there for about 35 minutes, Liz about 35 minutes. 3 hours later, I'm still sat in there. Well, the guy who I used to call dad, his dad I called granddad, but my mum left him for my granddad. So my granddad became my dad and my dad became my brother. Then she left him for a woman. I did pastry modelling. I'm a product of an affair. And we were just there for hours. So when Atomic Kitten became famous, out of the three of us, I was the one who got the attention, and the big tits, the blonde hair, the gob, the pretty one, but, you know. And I had that much skeletons in my closet. The press honed in on that. Do I wish any of that came out? It'd be nice to have a simpler life, but he wants simple, he wants boring. You know, on my deathbed, at least I can say it was colourful.
Yeah. I think there's something really powerful about not pretending to be someone other than you're not.
Unapologetically as well, may I say.
Well, let's talk for a minute about your children.
Yeah.
So 5 lovely children. You recently shared a picture of you with all 4 of your daughters, and you also have a son. You've also spoken about you, because you have this kind of blended family with different fathers. You've talked about how your eldest two have felt hurt that your ex Brian McFadden is a better dad. They believe he's a better dad to his new toddler daughter than to them. I think, you know, there are a lot of blended families out there. I'm one of them. So how do you respond to that? You know, when they told you that?
They haven't come out and said to me, because again, this is a lot of stuff that was in the book that I've had to take out because that's their story to tell, not mine. All I'm saying is I know, I see my girls, and I know, bear in mind, Molly was three and Lily was one when me and Brian split up. You guys probably have a better memory of what mine and what my kids do of me and Brian. The first time me and Brian had been in the room together was Molly's 21st. Now, that was weird for Molly. She's never had us in the room together. So I know that it hurts them. I know that he's not hurting them purposely. It's just, I think, as you get older as a person, you get more patient, your life's different. When me and Brian split up, he went to Australia for 7 years, so the children never saw him. So, you know, I was one doing the sports, say the parents' evening, you know, going to the plays. And I did all that. Brian didn't do any of that. So I do know that, you know, if he's at a park with Ruby, I'm sure it hurts them. That's not them telling me a lot, saying out loud, because I don't want to do that. But, yeah, it does. It hurts them. But that's life, isn't it? You know, we're all going to have these issues. It's life. Families change, people move on.
But you've been there constant. Are you really close to them as a result of that?
Yeah, Molly's on the phone. Like, Molly lives in Ireland. So Molly moved to Ireland when she was 16. She did, Brian doesn't live in Ireland, like, make that clear. So when I say Molly lives in Ireland, everyone thinks that Molly lives with her dad. No, he lives in Rochdale. With a wonderful partner, may I say, Danielle, who's Mrs., who's absolutely lovely. So Molly, I always feel bad, you know, I feel bad to talk about Brian sometimes for her and for my Ryan, because Brian's famous, people want to know that story. But it was, 18 years ago, and no one can seem to get over it. But I do feel bad because he's got a relationship now, I've got my relationships. And this is not me having a dig at him or his new relate anything, because I wish him nothing but best. And, you know, but we do have children together. And the only reason why I speak about it is, as a mother, I see the hurt in their eyes. And that hurts me.
Yeah, I think even if both parents are, you know, with the best of will, that there's always that challenge, right? When you have children who don't live with their father or their other parent or don't have much contact, that it's always a challenge to, I don't know, keep everybody on an even keel or make them, keep them center stage, so to speak.
It is really tough. I mean, Molly's 21 now and Lily's 19, and they're both great. And I think everyone should have therapy. Everybody should have therapy, even if you come from the most normalist of normal lives. I think it's always good to go talk to somebody else. I've encouraged my children, all my kids, to get that.
But there's no such thing as normal.
Let's say it's society. Society, they're the ones who put you in this bracket and this box. Especially here in England, we have such a snobbery camaraderie about things, how life should be, and, you know, how many people are allowed to sleep with, and once you've been married once and that's the end of it, you can never get married again. That, you know, it's, we have such a way of this, how life should be. And it's like, who sets the rules? Because they tell you, they say, they put you in that bracket. If you're from a working class background or an upper class background, you know, it's different. I'm sure I'd be treated differently if I wasn't from a council estate. 100%. But even in the papers, me and my other half was watching The Chase the other day. I'm actually really good with my general knowledge, really good. And one of the chasers made a joke about me, as if to imply that I was thick. And me and my other half went, what? I want tipping point. because of the way I'm portrayed, because I'm a loud mouth, because I'm in foster home, because of this, that I'm some kind of low class. It was like when I was in foster home in school, like, some of the teachers would treat me differently because in foster home, as if I was a bad kid. I was a bloody great kid. It was only when I became an adult that I kind of messed up. But it is, people judge us so differently because of our upbringing or where we're from, not who you are on face value.
It's interesting you talk about judgment, because I wanted to ask you about OnlyFans. What's it like?
Well, what's it like when you go to the cinema or you go and watch Love Actually every year, and there's that scene with Martin Freeman and that bird from Gavin and Stacey? You know the scene I'm talking about? I just show a bit of nipple. You've got Natalie Portman on Black Swan masturbating. You've got Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise grinding on each other. I show a bit of nipple. It's like, your poor kids must be embarrassed. Why is no one saying that to Nicole Kidman? Because she's put in a class of society. Because she went to theatre, darling. Am I right?
You're right. You're totally right. I also want to say that I watched stupidly Love Actually last Christmas. I'd forgotten that scene. Well, I watched it with my 10-year-old. I wasn't bloody laughing. I was like, oh, Jesus, I'd forgotten this bit.
That's what I mean. But no one would go on my OnlyFans anyway. Mine's in over 18. But it just goes to show how, especially women, were treated differently because of our upbringing. Because I didn't go to Sylvia Young, darling. You know, oh, your poor kids, they must be so embarrassed by you. And Nicole Kidman's kids embarrassed of her. Are they? Does anyone say that to her or Angelina Jolie when she's simulating sex in her Hollywood films that she's winning awards for or getting Oscars? When anyone says anything about OnlyFans, it's like, it doesn't, I think every year, I mean, I started out as a page 3 model anyway. I had a great set of tits on me. Wasn't going to be a rocket scientist, so that was my get out. I was a pretty girl. I used what God gave me. I mean, half my body's not mine now anyway.
Did you just say half my body's not mine now anyway?
Honestly, I've been slicing and diced that many bleeding times. I like a fat pack for my gear, love. I've got the instructions tattooed on my bum. I'll support me together in the morning.
Well, I was about to say, where are the instructions? They take a long time to build and you need an Allen key.
Or a Ryan key.
A Ryan key, I like that one.
So you've said you think Lily should go on Love Island. Do you reckon she'd smash it?
Yeah, because Lily's not your typical... See, all the girls that go on there, Lily's a scruffy little bastard. I'm not going to lie. She really is. See, my 15-year-old Heidi, I said to her, what do you want to do in Lily's school? She went, I want to be Molly May. And she's so insecure. When I watch her take a picture, she doesn't show her face. She's putting filters on. Why don't I look like this? Why don't I look like that? And I want our Lily to go on there and be like a scruffy little bastard like she's at home and show other teenagers that's okay. So you don't have to be putting a face full of makeup on it. I mean, I never wear makeup anyway. You don't have to be putting a full face of makeup on. You don't have to, you know, putting lashes on, and by all means, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I have my surgeries, I've had Botox, but I'm 42. I'm entitled to, I'd give birth to a bloody orphanage. Do you know what I mean? I'm entitled to tweets and peaks. But these bastard 25-year-olds are all looking the same. It's like, enjoy your tight skin while you've got it. You know, they're all like be individuals, you know, and yes, I've chased my youth because I'm getting older. I mean, I feel I'm entitled to that. Once you've had your kids, and, you know, you start getting into your mid-30s, start tweaking. Do what you want. There's nothing wrong with it. It's like getting a teeth pulled these days, isn't it? You know, but...
A bit of teeth whitening.
Yeah, same thing. I think it's so normal these days, but I think there should be an age limit on it. I really do. I think, enjoy your life. Don't live by what other people tell you. No, don't be defined of other people's opinions, because that's how I lived for so many years.
Ladies, think about now, though, like 10, 20 years from now, you'll look at a picture of yourself now and you'll go, oh, my gosh, I looked amazing. I was so youthful.
At 21, I was married with a child, but I was in a unique situation. I was famous. I was a pop star marrying another pop star. The struggles I had was I mean, we were so poor that my nan used to get arsed off a jumble sale. She bought me some shoes once that gave me verrucas. And we used to live it. I mean, I got put into a semi-independence house. And I remember I was that poor. I had this gig lined up. I think it was only £50 for this gig, a dancing gig. And I got my period. And I couldn't afford to buy sanitary towels or Tampax. And I really needed this £50. So I sold my parrot for £20. So I could go buy the Tampax so I could make a £30 profit.
Oh.
Yeah. It was really bad. I used to go cash my mum's gyro and my mum would go and piss for like 3 days on the end. I'd been like 9 years of age, you know, living on ketchup butties. I've been on every side of the coin you can possibly think of. And then go into bankruptcy and lost it all again. But even now, like my Molly and Lily, when I was like ridiculously rich, like a multi-millionaire, I had all the cars and the kids at private school. I mean, I got all that again now. But back then, I saw a change in my Molly and Lily. So I took them to a refuge that was an ambassador of, and we bought all the kids in their toys. Nothing expensive, but to show them, because you've got to bear in mind, my children have been born into this industry. They've been born with Kerry as their mum. They know no different. Whereas I come from really struggling. So we do these things just to, like, I took him back there to show him that not everyone's brought up or as lucky as what you are. So every year we half everything and it goes back into the universe and goes back to the charities and goes back to the refugees and things like that.
And you're a patron to a charity that deals with mental health and that kind of thing. Is that right?
I'm not a patron. What I do everything for all my... Every charity who gets in touch with me, I'm a massive advocate for it. I was diagnosed with bipolar back in 2005. I was absolutely and utterly ridiculed and crucified because of a medication I was on that gave me a side effect of speech slur. And I was just accused of being alcoholic and a druggie. And listen, I've shoved enough shit up my nose. I've drank till cows come home. I've got no reason to lie at all. I've done it all, done everything you can possibly think of. That was pure bipolar medication. Why would I lie? I actually went and did a drug test. An alcoholic test, it was all clear, but no one cared. But the way I was treated, looking back on it, was just horrendous. And I like to think I've been a beacon for other people not to get treated like that. That made me suicidal, that did. I mean, I was literally like, I went on the show absolutely normal in my head, well, I won't say normal, and my speech was slur. And it was like, I remember Fern was sat there and she went, she was reading OK magazine about this article and she says to me, you say like you're like you drinking in this article, Kerry, in this OK shoot, you're in Marbella around the pool, neck in shots, are you an alcoholic? And I'm like, I'm 28 years of age, in Marbella, without my children, of course I'm necking shots. And with my speech being slur, because you know your speech is a bit slur. Well, it's because of my medication. I took it at midnight last night. I have something called bipolar. Not once did they say, oh, what's bipolar? What is it? And what medication are you on? No, they never. But I guarantee Fern went home every night and opens a bottle of red wine and drinks that in front of the teller. I don't drink at home. But I guarantee that's what happens. But because I'm on holiday at 28, getting off my tits, and I was, not going to lie.
But look how that's changed. You know, if you were on this morning talking about bipolar now, everyone would be celebrating you for raising the issues of mental health. And it's great how it's changed, but we can't forget what it was like and how you were just totally shredded for it.
I feel really blessed that I got through it. And I have a resilience so deep down inside me that just you can knock me down, but you won't keep me down. I'll decide on when I get back up. But I'll never forget coming from the show, which is shown in London, and driving back up north. And as I'm pulling up to my house, it was camera crews. And perhaps I'm thinking, what the fuck's going on? Are you an alcoholic, Kerry? Are you this, Kerry? And I'm like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is a nightmare. This is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. You've had so many chapters in your life. What's next for Kerry Katona?
It's really weird. There's no dramas in my life. There's, I think maybe I was a little bit addicted to it. You know, this is, I didn't know any different. And it's just the only dramas in my life are what my kids bring me now. Do you know what I mean? Their own issues and their own shit that they've got to deal with. Normal stuff. That now, like, I get a bit of that angst and anxiety thinking, oh, God. What? Why is it so normal? You know, my finances, my love life, my health, my kids, my career's going from strength to strength. It's all really good. My manager just texted me saying, call me after your Zoom, I've got some great news. It just keeps getting better.
Isn't that the nicest thing to end on? It just keeps getting better.
Oh, thank you for having me. All the best.